Today is April 16th, 2014, and this is episode number 250 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, your in-prison entertainment for the day. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and if you'd like to comment on or question anything, Troll sat alone on a seat of stone, and he shoot us a note, ACM@macobserver.com. Actually, let's spend this particular episode of the Apple Context Machine going over our favorite Tolkien poetry and songs.
You know, considering it's between that and Vogon poetry, I think the Tolkien is totally the way to go.
I think I have far too much Tolkien poetry memorized.
There once was a hobbit from Nantucket.
That's a different show, Jeff. That's our other show.
Oh, right. Totally different demographic. My bad.
Much different demographic. So,
well, I don't know. There may actually be some overlap. It's not our place to judge.
It is not our place to judge.
I can't wait to see the fanfic. Actually, I probably can wait.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I just, yeah. good Lord, our listeners are going to think I'm just completely bonkers. Well, they probably all thought that.
Well.
Yeah, they're not far off anyway. Goodness gracious. Well, Apple Context Machine. It's actually been kind of a busy week.
Yeah, I guess some stuff has happened. A few things.
Yeah, a few things here and there.
Yeah. Where would you like to start? Or more accurately, where do you want to rant first, Brian?
We do have some rants coming up, don't we?
Yeah, we kind of do.
Yeah. So why don't we start with Peter
Mizek.
Peter Mizek. I was trying to come up with an appropriate, you know, quote unquote nickname for him there in the middle, but I can't.
Oh,
wrong again.
Peter the Oracle.
Mizek. Peter the Oracle. That's a good one. Because I was
the first. I did thing air came, quotes too.
Fair enough. First thing that came to my mind was wrong again, but that's already my name for Rob Enderle. So, you know, don't want to cheat Rob.
No, that wouldn't be fair.
No.
And after all, it is all about being professional, and that's his name.
So Peter Mizek is an analyst. Who's he with these days?
I believe he's with Jefferies.
He is with Jefferies. That would be the case. And he's frequently cited by the mainstream press, but he's one of those guys who's often wrong. And by often, I mean usually.
And by usually, you mean, well, pretty much all the time.
Exactly. So, let's see here. We have a random snippet of Mr. Mizek from last year. We've got him cutting his price target for Apple from 500 down to 420. This would have been in March of last year when Apple was trading in the mid-4s. Or maybe even still in the 5s. I don't remember. I don't have a chart in front of me. But he cut Apple because rumors for the low-cost iPhone, which of course never materialized, that Apple was going to miss its target launch window for the low-cost iPhone. Of course, Apple didn't release a low-cost iPhone.
They clearly missed that target.
Yeah, they clearly missed that target. And, of course, Apple released its iPhones exactly when everyone else expected them to. And, you know, cutting Apple's price target in March for something that was supposed to happen, I don't know. That's just weird. I mean, that's just bad analysis. bad analysis. It's bad analysis. I'm
picturing you with your hand on your hip and waggling your finger down at the analyst. That's bad analysis.
True story. Hand on my hip, and I was waggling my finger. True, right then.
Well, to be fair, I can actually see you through the glass.
That's true. That's you cheated, right? And then also in February, he had said that Apple was going to be doing a March event to announce an Apple TV SDK, and that Apple would launch the so-called iTV, i.e., its new television set, in the fall. Neither of which was true.
So at what point are you going to roll up the newspaper and bop him on the nose?
Well, he needs it. He needs someone to do that. And he does this. He does this a lot. He releases research notes for his clients that seem like they're based on some kind of insider information, but he's never right.
Yeah, so is it bad insider information? Is it bad analysis of the information he's getting? Or is he just kind of making stuff up? And by making stuff up, I don't mean lying. I mean, he's just coming up with stuff that to him seems reasonable.
It's probably never ascribe. How does that? Was that a Mark Twain? Never ascribe. To malice, what can be better explained through
stupidity,
or something like that. I don't think he's stupid. I mean, the man's. Very few analysts are actually stupid. Being a Wall Street analyst is something that involves lots of money, and while a lot of analysts don't understand Apple, and a lot of analysts are wrong about Apple all the time. I will ascribe to malice someone like Doug Kass, who is constantly bagging on Apple in ways that I cannot fathom why the SEC doesn't come down on him like a ton of bricks and fine him gajillions of dollars, throw him in jail. But so yeah, I'll ascribe to malice much of what Doug Kass says, but not Peter Misek. But he's often wrong, and either his sources are poor or his ability to interpret what his sources say is not very good. But again, he is frequently cited by the mainstream press.
You know, I bet part of that citing or common citing is because the things he says can make for enticing headlines. You know, like the thing this last week where he talked about the iPhone 6 is going to cost $100 more.
And that's why we're talking about him today.
Right. Do you like how he did that subtle segue right into that?
I do. I was. It's so much better than my segues that I thought maybe it was a mistake.
I can see why you would think that.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you're the one who covered that for us, so tell us what he said.
Okay, so what he said is that Apple's going to bump up the price of the iPhone 6 by $100, and that carriers are being somewhat resistant to that because they're afraid that they will end up losing sales to competitors, and that's it in a nutshell for what he's saying. The part that he's missing, which you brought up when we were chatting before we started recording, is of course it would cost $100 more because it's supposed to be the bigger screen iPhone, and it won't be the only iPhone. Which
right.
I think is an important point.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's actually this is like such a no-brainer story to me. So he's calling, and lots of people. He certainly wasn't the first, so I'm not going to pin this on him. He's calling Apple's expected larger screen device the iPhone 6. Lots of people have done so. We don't actually know what Apple's going to call it. Could be the iPhone Pro. I doubt that, but could be.
I would be very surprised. But yes, it could be.
It could also be the iPhone 6. That will also surprise me for what it's worth. I think that Apple's going to want to keep the current screen size, first of all. I think they're going to want to keep that on the market. And I think they're probably going to want to keep that be the numbered device. So, like, the iPhone 6 really should be the next iteration
of the current screen.
Of the current screen size, yeah. Because I don't think Apple's going to do away with that. I think that Apple's going to have... The real question to me is okay. So, Apple is probably going to have at least one device with the current screen size. And then it's going to have another iPhone device with the larger screen size, and this time I'm not saying it to put Jeff on tilt, but what the rest of the world looks at is a phablet.
Okay, continue.
I guess putting you on tilt was just the icing on that cake.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes, of course it was.
I wasn't trying to, but you know, I guess I'll take what I can get. Because there is no chance that Apple is not going to release that larger screen device this year. This is the year for Apple to do that. And I think that it's going to be marketed side by side, just like every other company that has a large screen mobile phone, smartphone, markets them side by side with the smaller screen devices. Apple's going to do the same thing. But the question is, will Apple have the replacement for the iPhone 5C, the replacement for the iPhone 5S, and a new larger screen device? Or will it just be the replacement for the 5C and then the new larger screen device?
You know, I like the idea of the iPhone 5C style being the let's call it the smaller screen size.
Okay.
And and then having the product lines differentiated not only
by screen size.
Yeah, the screen size, but also the body shape some too. And so you have the pro level phone and you have the mid-range phone. And a mid-range phone has the smaller screen.
And so by this scenario, I guess, for lack of a better word, Apple introduced the 5C last year in September of 2013, in part as preparation for its move to having a larger screen device and the new mid-range device that we currently know as the 5C. And in that case, the 5S would become the 6. And I don't know, maybe we'll have, would it be? See, my problem here is I can't see the iPhone 6 be the large screen phablet device and then the iPhone 6C being a colored smaller screen device.
Yeah, I think they're going to have some other suffix that goes on the iPhone name to differentiate these models, because I'm with you. I don't see them doing iPhone 6 and then iPhone 6C the way you just described.
That doesn't make any sense. But I also, it's really easy for me to see Apple offering three devices: the mid-range device, the high-end device, and then the high-end device with the large screen.
Can you imagine if they decided to go with the naming they're using on their Mac and their iPad lines? So you'd have the iPhone Air, and the iPhone Pro.
Yeah, I could see that, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense.
No,
yeah, it wouldn't. No, I cannot see that.
So you could see it for a brief moment.
I could see the iPhone Pro. I can't see the iPhone Air.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I'm just visualizing people being in the store, and it's suddenly a flashback to the Performa Quadra Centris LC.
I don't know, man. It works for the laptops, and it works for the iPad line. Of course, yeah, we don't have an iPad Pro.
I think it could lead to confusion in the iPhone line.
Well, but whatever they do, they're going to need. If they do three models, they're going to have three names. So, you know, one way or another, they're going to have three names. If they're going to do two models, they're going to have two names. You know, and currently what we have is, or what we've had in the past is we've had three names. We've had this year's device, last year's device, and 2 years ago device.
And then right. Now, all differentiated by numbers or letters at the end.
Right. And now we have the 2 year ago device, the 5C and the 5S. And I don't have a lot of color on what the full product range is going to look like, but I am convinced that a large screen device is coming out. And the thing, I was already convinced of that, but seeing these court documents, these emails where Phil Schiller says customers want what we don't have, which is a cheap phone and a big phone. And that's where most of the growth in the non-iPhone market was coming from. That convinced me that Apple will go. Apple had identified and was ready to move on the large screen device.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen.
Yeah,
but
yes, it will.
So let's get back to Peter Mizek. So Peter Mizek says that Apple's going to raise the price of the iPhone by $100, and that's just bad analysis because he's specifically talking about a large screen device. Apple's not going to raise the price of the iPhone. The Apple's going to introduce a new large screen iPhone at a $100 price point. That's higher than the current one. Duh. Of course they are. What else are they going to do? They're going to release it for the same price as the current iPhone and then sell the current iPhone? It's ridiculous. That is bad analysis. It is not smart analysis. It's not. There's no critical thinking there.
Okay. Now, I agree with you. And now I'm wondering... If this is the year we see the shakeup in models that I was expecting this last year, and so instead of having what we have right now with the 2 year old model being the freebie, so to speak, that goes away completely, and. That would fit with bringing in a bigger screen size, drop the really old model, and then now we're back to two screen sizes again because otherwise we'd have three.
Yeah. And the four S screen sizes is gone this year.
Yeah, it has to be. Well, it doesn't have to be, but I'm certain it will be, just like I was certain last year. And then we'll have the mid-range and low-end, which will be new phones. And then we'll have the high-end, which is the big screen.
I still don't think that Apple's getting into the low-end.
Well, when I say low-end, that's not fair. I should say the mid-range. The same market the iPhone 5C targets today.
Gotcha.
And I'm wondering if at some point they're just going to drop the idea of keeping a phone around that they can sell for that carriers can essentially give away for free.
No, I don't think Apple's going to want to do that. I think that Apple's going to want to keep something for the free with a subsidy model. I think that's an important price point to get people through the door.
All right, well, then that's like an 8-gig 5C.
Sure.
Which is available in a couple markets now.
Right. Yeah, and if the iPhone finally moves up to 128 gigs for the high end, which I hope is the case, I would love to.
I've been hoping for that for a long time.
Yeah, I would very much. Me and my music collection would very much like that. If that happens, we'd probably be looking at the 16 gig. Whatever way, I don't think Apple's going to keep that price point. They need to keep that price point. And to me, it makes a lot of sense to have $100 a free, again with the subsidy, free $99, $199, and then $299 starting with this with the large screen iFablet.
What did I ever do to you?
I don't know, but I'm sure it was horrible.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, so anyway, Peter Misek, the Oracle, Peter the Oracle Misek, I like that. Just issuing some more nonsense, and lots of people paid attention to it. My particular favorite, and I there was a Seeking Alpha piece that I read part of that was like, you know, that this is going to be a terrible mistake. Apple raising the price of the iPhone is going to be a terrible mistake. They're going to lose share. No one's going to want to do it. And part of his reason is that, carriers basically don't want iPhone. I mean, it was just awful. It was just awful drivel coming from Seeking Alpha. I was not impressed at all. The reality is that carriers love iPhone customers. They hate the subsidies they have to pay for Apple.
But they like the customers.
They like the customers. They make more money off of us than they make off of the other customers. There's less churn, which is a huge deal for carriers.
And we
use more services, yeah.
You know, I think part of the problem with analysts freaking out over prices is that the model...
Pundits.
It's that the model they have to work with is the model that they remember from last century.
Yeah.
Where PCs became just basically junk products, BIC lighters with floppy disks in them.
Yep.
And it was a price race to the bottom.
Yep.
And I think that's what a lot of these pundits want to see. Same thing.
Yeah, it's all but with phones. It's all they understand. They want to fit Apple. Anyway. Let's not get off on that particular tangent. So instead, let's go jump on Samsung for being caught lying yet again.
Wait.
Yet again.
Samsung lied?
Yet again.
No.
Yet again. How does this company have fans? How does anyone look at this company and pretend to themselves that they do anything remotely innovative or interesting?
Well... Okay, there are some people that don't follow the tech industry like we do. So all they know is that they hear big screens are the thing, or something is the thing that they need in technology. And that happens to be on a Samsung phone. So they get it, and they think, oh, it's great. So there are a lot of people that just don't understand. And then, of course, there's the segment of people that still see platforms as a holy war, and yeah. So that they'll go to Samsung or HTC or whoever,
an Apple.
Yeah, because it's not Apple.
Yeah, it's just fascinating that Samsung has just shown again and again and again that they have little corporate integrity. They have few corporate scruples, and that they'll lie, and they lie all the time. They've gotten busted lying again, lying and cheating on the benchmarks. That was one of my favorites.
Oh, right.
That was one of my favorites.
Like no one was going to figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. That's just that's the thing. I know we talked about this, but I'll just say it yet again. What's fascinating is that the only people who would have been impressed with the results of the cheating are the same people who would uncover the cheating in the first place.
Yeah. And you have to wonder, did they think about this? Or maybe they looked at the bigger picture And they figured it doesn't matter because enough people that don't understand will hear these numbers, and that's all we need. Just we have to get enough people to hear.
I guess. I don't think anyone cares about benchmarks anymore. Except, I mean, besides the subset of people who do. And it's a small subset. No one cares about benchmarks.
You know, yeah, I agree. I think it's a very small subset. We're deep in this industry. And I don't care what the processor speed is in my
iPhone. Well, I'm interested in that. And I'm definitely but, you know, part of the problem is that because Apple doesn't really play the benchmark games, it's hard. Apple apparently is uninterested in making the case for the reality that it does far more with fewer resources than competing devices.
Okay, see, and this is why benchmarking and processor specs aren't that compelling to me. It's because there's so many variables that are coming into play. You can't get data that's meaningful in a way that will draw me in.
There is one area where the benchmarking bragging does make a little bit of sense, though.
Okay.
And that's when you're comparing apples to apples, i.e. Android devices to Android devices.
Okay,
makes a little
sure.
Makes a little bit less sense when you're comparing Android devices to an iPhone or iPad. But if all you care about is making sure that people think that your device is better than the other Android device, then it makes more sense.
Well, that tactic worked to a degree back during the PC wars.
Right.
And I'm sure to some extent it still works, because if you throw big numbers at people, if they don't understand what they really mean, there's a likelihood they would be impressed.
Yeah. It's true. So the thing that they got caught lying about this time around are tablet sales.
Let me guess. They were being coy and listed tablet sales that were way below what they really sold. We're just modest like that.
No. This was all uncovered due to court documents. Daniel. What did I call him?
Darren.
I love that guy's right. Well, he needs an editor. Daniel. I would like to volunteer to edit you.
However, you'll need to wear a name tag.
Yes, because I have such a block on your name. I don't know why that is, but I love this guy. I totally love this guy. He's so awesome. He'll wade through these enormous... He writes for Apple Insider. And he'll wade through enormous amounts of data and then try to provide context for it. And he does an incredible job at that. I love reading that guy. He not only wade through the Samsung documents that came out, but then he actually compared those Samsung documents to some of the stuff that was coming out from the various research firms about tablet sales over the last couple of years, where they were all saying that there were these, you know, gajillions of Android tablets that were taking market share away from Apple's devices from the iPad, even though we weren't seeing anyone using those devices, and even though none of the various usage metrics showed anybody using them. And one of the things that they said, Samsung claimed to have sold 2 million Galaxy Tabs, I think during like 6 weeks or something like that in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out they actually sold 1 million through the entire year.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Yes. And, you know, Samsung, this isn't the first time that Samsung has been fudging those numbers. Of course, part of the issue is that Apple alone reports actual sales of their devices. When they specify units sold, it's actual sales to users, and they will tell analysts how much of that was how much inventory they actually have in the channel. Mm-hmm. And none of the other companies do that. The other companies tend to report sales to the channel as sales, and they never mention what's the word for it? Not take backs.
Returns.
Returns. Thank you. Goodness. We have asked on this show, we have asked many times, what are people doing with those tablets? Those other tablets, those non-iPads.
And
it turns out that there weren't as, they're just, not only are the few that do get sold actually being used, but there aren't even as many being sold as we were told. Because Samsung lied.
Now, you'd think that they'd know that eventually figures like that would get uncovered.
Turns out they did.
Yeah. So why in the world would you lie about something like that? And at some point, you run the risk of pissing off your investors and landing with a lawsuit in your lap.
Yeah, maybe. And we're talking about a company that's based in another country, where it owns much of the infrastructure of that country. I don't really think a Samsung has got to worry about an investor lawsuit like that.
Well, even if they ended up with an investor lawsuit, they wouldn't have to worry because their pockets are deep enough, they can fix it.
Probably. But we have, every time we have a data point about Samsung, they end up coming down on the side of stealing, lying, cheating, breaking the rules, doing whatever is convenient to them at the time, instead of making good products.
That's not good.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I know I'm overly hung up on such quaint notions as good and evil and right and wrong and doing the right thing, but I don't know. I don't understand why this company has fans. I don't understand why anyone would dare hold Samsung up as being in any way whatsoever better at anything than Apple.
You know, I'm now wondering, because Samsung is a really big company and they make a lot more than electronics.
Oh yeah.
Do they have the same type of issues in other markets that they're in?
Well, they may or they may not, but in other markets, they're, you know, everyone is playing by essentially the same rules. Yeah, that's part of it, right? Apple is not playing by those rules.
Yeah, I guess there's probably not a big market for stealing ideas to make sure that you have the next greatest dishwasher.
I wonder. If there are any dishwasher aficionados out there, feel free to.
Yeah, or home appliances in general.
Yes, home appliances in general. Feel free to let us know. Now, I do know that there. I've seen some really cool dishwashers. Some really cool, like, newer dishwashers that do some really, really cool things that just blow the dishwashers that certainly that I grew up with out of the water.
I've seen some amazing dishwashers, like stuff that looks like it's out of science fiction.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe there's industrial espionage and IP stealing in that market too. Who knows?
Yeah. We should probably go check out WhirlpoolObserver.com. See what they're saying about the dishwasher market.
Yeah, find out the hot news on dishwashers. All right, this week's episode is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace.
I love it when they're a sponsor.
Yep. Squarespace, this is a company that makes tools for you to host a gorgeous, gorgeous website.
And you don't have to be a designer to come up with these gorgeous sites. You pick what you want, and they have some incredibly well-designed layouts. And for me to say that, that's saying a lot.
Exactly.
And and you pick the layout you want and just run with it. And just like that, you have a really professional-looking site. And if you need to customize it, that's okay. You can do that too.
You can do that too, right? You can drag and drop your content. The templates really, 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 they're just gorgeous. And this company adds new features all the time. What did they just? They announced.
Yeah, rolled out a couple new ones. Announcement bars.
The announcement bar and the mobile information bar.
Yes.
Mobile information bar basically is a bar that on mobile devices it gives a quick shortcut for contact information, address, phone number, email, business hours, that sort of stuff.
Right. I'm assuming that fits in with the whole responsive design thing, which it would totally make sense. If you don't know what responsive design is, it's when you have a website that can figure out the size of screen that it's on, and then can adjust itself so that it looks proper for that screen size. And depending on how big or how small your screen goes, you can add and remove elements. And in this case, how about adding in a mobile information bar for people on their smartphones?
Right. And then they have an announcement bar also for being able to put any kind of announcement you want at the top of your site. I mean, they have an e-commerce platform. This is a great company if you are wanting to put together your own site and you don't want to hire a designer.
I love that you can try it out without having to feel like you're giving up a lot of personal information. You don't have to give them a credit card to sign up and try out a site.
Right. You can start a trial with no credit card. That is, you know, we've talked about this before. I hope that more companies do this going forward where fine, they'll give you a trial, but you've got to give them a credit card and they're going to automatically start charging you unless you tell them no. That's not what Squarespace does. You can start it off. You don't give them a credit card. You get your trial and then they'll charge you if you want to keep going past the trial. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is really good stuff. So when you sign up for Squarespace, use our code ACM. It's for the Apple Context Machine. You get 10% off your first purchase, and you'll be showing your support for us by telling them that you'll support them because they're supporting us as well. And you get 10% off your first purchase, and that can either be for 1 month, or if you're buying a year at a time, which is a much better deal, you get 10% off the whole year.
And I believe that includes a free web domain if you're doing the whole year.
Yeah, if you do a whole year, you get a free web domain, and otherwise, if you want to pay by the month, plans start at only $8 a month. Definitely check out Squarespace. I like this company. I like what they're doing. Democratizing good design. That's what they're doing.
I like that line.
I like that line, too. I like that line, too. Okay.
Wow, I feel like hugging now.
I know, right? Amazon. Did I take the hug out of you?
Yep, just like that.
Excellent. Amazon's hardware ambitions. That's the note I have for this segment of the show. Mm-hmm. Amazon's hardware ambitions.
Okay.
What do you think about this?
Well, excuse me. I think there are some places where it makes sense and places where it doesn't. Like when they released the Kindle, that made sense because
a lot of sense.
Yeah, because they want to tie people into their book sales.
Yeah, they were trying to grow a market that was almost non-existent, which is ebooks. I mean, there were other ebook platforms before Kindle, but they were tiny, And Amazon wanted to blow open ebooks because there are fewer inventory and logistics expenses for ebooks, right? So it made a lot of sense that they did the Kindle.
Right. And they followed that up with the Kindle Fire, which made sense as well, because now not only do they have you buying your ebooks from them, but they've given you a portable portal directly into the Amazon site to buy everything else that you want to get too.
I did not like the Fire, and I thought that the Fire was a bad idea, and the Fire didn't sell all that well.
I think the Fire's a bad implementation, generally speaking, but I think it was a really good idea because it's your Amazon shopping cart in the palm of your hand, essentially.
Yeah, I suppose so. And the reality is they've turned with the Fire HD, which they announced last year. Mm-hmm. Right, was that last year, the Fire HD? And whatever their 8.9 inch device is. I mean, those are much better.
The Bonfire
tablets. No, Bonfire. Those are much better tablets than the original Fire. Much better. Much, 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 much better. Yep. But they're still, in my opinion, they're still pale shadows to the iPad.
Well, to be fair, they're not designed to compete with the iPad. They're designed to be sales portals for Amazon.
Well, I know, but if I want a sales portal to Amazon, I'd still rather do that on my iPad.
There are people out there that really like the tight integration with the rest of Amazon through a Fire.
Yeah.
However, clearly not enough to make a dent in iPad sales.
No. Clearly not. And I think that they've established a niche for themselves for, like, starter tablets at best.
Oh, yes. I will totally agree with you. Yep.
Starter tablets. I like that, by the way.
Yeah.
I just coined that just now.
Yeah, there you go. Starter tablet.
It's a starter tablet.
All right. So moving on from their tablet hardware, now we have the Fire TV, which I think is a good idea. And that's a set-top box, much like Apple TV, that links directly back in to your Amazon Prime Instant Video account, as well as Netflix and Hulu and YouTube and some other services. And I think it's a really smart idea, because if you have an audience that's already using Amazon Prime and they already have a Kindle Fire, so they're watching TV shows and movies on their tablet, why not give them a set-top box device so they can watch content on a big screen and potentially buy more stuff?
I cannot get excited about this thing.
Now, I didn't say I'm excited about it. I said it makes sense.
I suppose.
I mean, if you are deep into buying your content from Amazon.
But who's really deep into that? See, that's the thing. I don't think that, you know, Amazon's cheap approach to stuff doesn't really make for an ecosystem. It kind of makes for this is the place I go for cheap stuff. I almost said something else.
Well, inexpensive. That's the word you're thinking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think...
Well, if you have all the cheap stuff and you want to make an ecosystem, then why not make the hardware that gives people the direct link into all the cheap stuff?
Yeah, I suppose... I suppose, and of course, you know, the Fire TV actually came out before last week's show, and we didn't bother talking about it. And we're talking about it this week because there's a new rumor, or a renewed rumor, that Amazon's going to be doing its own smartphone.
And this is the one where I sit back and go, because that one doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah, I can't imagine who wants an Amazon. It's like it's exactly the same thing as the Facebook smartphone. Who wants the Amazon smartphone?
Well, and we already know the answer to the Facebook smartphone. No one. But for Amazon, to figure out who would want it, you need to figure out what it is that they expect to accomplish with this. And I can't figure out what the marketing sense would be for a smartphone that's branded as an Amazon device.
Yeah.
I mean, is it going to have dedicated app buttons on the home screen that that let you go shop for Amazon stuff?
Yay.
I'm not sure if that's worthy of creating your own hardware, or maybe what you should do is strike up partnerships with carriers or cell phone makers to get your app put on the home screen.
I could see Amazon wanting to have a dedicated window shopping device where they're just brazenly marketing it as a device that you can go to a brick and mortar store and scan a QR code or scan a barcode and then you know order it from Amazon at a cheaper price. I can see Amazon wanting to do that, assuming. If you're going to short-sightedly do that in the first place, you probably already know that you can do that with any smartphone. I don't see the market for this. The Fire HD and the Fire have never sold well. I think they will continue to not sell that well. I think that they're, like I said, that they're starter tablets at best. I think that the Fire TV is going to do even less well, and I think that that an Amazon smartphone is going to do the least just best.
I will agree with you as far as best or worst for sales. And I'm hoping that the Amazon phone is just a bogus rumor, because I can't find any place where it really makes sense. And if that's the case, then what's the business model? I would be concerned as an investor that Amazon was losing their focus.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't understand the investment thesis for Amazon in the first place. I mean, the company doesn't make any money. Amazon's business model is focused mostly on destroying all value in every market that they enter.
And once they've destroyed the value and pushed everyone out, they now own the market.
Yeah, I suppose. But we've been hearing that now for 15 years. And, you know, at some point, they have to actually try to make a profit from something. But, you know, with the smartphone, I think, you know, it's been largely assumed that the Fire devices were being sold at cost, or at the very least for little or no profit. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that same thing is going to be the case for their Fire TV. I would assume it's going to be the same case for the smartphone. So why bother? You know, is an Amazon smartphone really going to get people to shop more? I don't think so. I don't see that.
No. All right. Now, I don't believe this is going to happen, but I'll toss this out as a what if. What if Amazon's going to launch their own MVNO? Meaning that they're a virtual carrier.
Yeah,
and I can see that. And then they would have their own cell phone to sell, to run, so people could use on Amazon.com cell service.
Yeah, I could see that. That at least seems possible. And we've heard rumors about Apple doing that for a long time, the rumors that have never borne out.
Right. And I think a lot of those rumors may have come from speculation that morphed into rumor.
Or even the Apple was in talks with somebody exploring the idea.
Sure. And exploring an idea is not the same thing as committing to a product rollout.
Yeah, or even you know, wanting to do a product rollout. But, you know, as you're saying, there's a huge gulf between let's find out and hey, we should do this.
Yes. And it wouldn't surprise me if Apple had at some point talked with companies about MVNO possibilities, just to figure out whether or not it's something they should even pursue at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And but I could see it actually, that to me would make more sense for Amazon even than it would for Apple, because I think it would be a pretty easy sell. And if it came with a requirement that you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, it further increases their Prime memberships.
Yes.
So that's, yeah, I would not, I would, if Amazon does that, I would be a lot less skeptical about their smartphone in the first place. But it seems like even there, it seems like it would be better that they go the Walmart road, which is to offer their MVNO for a wide variety of devices.
Yeah, you would think. Well, maybe if they do something like that, it'll be here's Amazon.call. Just made that up. And here's the great Amazon phone that we sell, but you can bring your own phone too. So they sell their own, but all the others, it's just bring your own phone.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, the awesome thing is going to be if by the end of the week, there are reports out there based on our idle speculation today that Amazon is about to launch an MVNO.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny. I guess to get back to our nuts and bolts here, Amazon is rumored to be doing a phone, and we didn't even mention the fact that one of the features that's rumored to be on this device is that it'll do 3D without glasses. Yay!
Oh yeah, and it has multiple cameras on the face, so it can register 3D gestures.
Yeah, whatever.
So this phone will have like five or six cameras on it. I think it's six cameras. A rear-facing camera, a front-facing camera for video and photos, and then four infrared cameras for 3D motion sensing.
Yeah, I guess. I scoff at that part of the rumor. If it turns out to be true, I will definitely eat my words. But I can't wait to buy the new Amazon phone because it's got 3D and I don't have to wear glasses and I can finally watch 3D movies.
But Brian, you have to wear glasses all the time anyhow.
It's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
You know, if you want to do 3D on a small device like that without glasses, we saw at Macworld exactly how you do that. There was that company Wiz 3D.
Yep.
And they had the software and everything ready to go for the iPhone and iPad, and they made polarized screen protectors that you put on, and it does 3D. So that in and of itself is clearly something that is possible. I don't think that you need to do anything extravagant on Amazon's side to just build that into the phone.
Yeah, probably not. I don't think that people are going to rush out to buy it because it's there. Even if they do it well.
I'm not convinced Amazon's doing it at all.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. And Amazon is a hardware company. I've never been able to buy into the case for it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Jeff Bezos has succeeded at most everything that he set out to do. The man's a freaking genius. And he thinks differently. And sometimes he thinks really differently.
Yeah.
But I'm very uninterested in Amazon as a hardware maker. Extremely uninterested.
And I can only assume that Amazon's play into the hardware market is part of a very long-term plan. And I say that because Jeff Bezos is clearly looking long-term at the stuff that he does. So if they're doing hardware and it's not selling well, but they continue to do it, there has to be a long-term plan in that.
Well, I think, if you remember going back to Google introducing Android, one of the reasons why they said that they wanted to do this is because if they didn't, that Apple was going to own the market, and they were worried about being eventually shut out of that market.
True. Yeah, and, that's true.
And, of course, the reality is that I really do think that Apple would love to have partnered with Amazon and with Google for the long term. And that, you know, that we would never have had an Apple Maps if Google hadn't proven untrustworthy as partners. And that there are lots, and that Google search would have formed the backbone of any kind of searching capability in the iPhone and the iOS platform. I think that Google would have been Apple's long term partner. That's why Eric Schmidt was on Apple's board. Mm-hmm. And that if Google hadn't betrayed Steve Jobs, as Steve Jobs saw it, that would not have changed. And in other words, it's Google's reactionary decision to make Android because they're worried about Apple owning mobile and eventually locking out Google ended up setting them up as adversaries in the first place, and that didn't need to be.
And yet here we are.
I think that Amazon may well have a similar concern, and of course in their case that concern I think has been a little more warranted. Apple did stop companies from allowing purchases from within apps that did not go through iTunes and that where Apple did not get a cut, and that is a very specific threat to Amazon. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what Amazon is hoping to, by doing their own hardware, they're hoping to not be shut out of mobile. But the problem is that I think that they're always going to be a niche hardware maker. Always. I don't think they're ever going to be a mainstream choice.
And maybe they're okay with that, because they're on all the mainstream devices. So if they're all those places, plus they have their own hardware, they've got the whole market covered.
Yeah, I guess, man.
I'm still not...
You're more sanguine about it than I am.
Yeah, well, there you go. But I'm still not on board with an Amazon phone. I'm just... I can't come up with a good case for that.
Fair enough. All right, take us out, eh?
Holy crap, it's been an hour.
Yeah, we got through a show.
Wow, go us. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamm at both places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at my Tolkien poetry recital account. Also at TM O'Brien, that's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at The Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by The Cashfly. The bass is by The Boom, recorded just for the TMO. The Squarespace was the sponsor for the episode. And that's all for this week.
And head over to the iTunes Store and Radar Show, because Brian loves it and he may stop using the quite so as yeah.
No, not it's not much chance happen. Of
that. But stay subscribed anyhow.
Yep, we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
All right, pop quiz. What's Samantha's husband's name?
Samantha's husband's
name? From Bewitched.
Oh, Darren. Oh.